You're listening to a Radio 1 91 FM podcast.
I have a question I'd like to ask all you lovely listeners. What would it be like to see a moor roaming around the great, beautiful forests of Fiordland? What would it be like to see a woolly mammoth roam around the tundras of Siberia? Well, these dreams might soon be a reality, according to some in the de-extinction field. According to others, maybe not so. We're going to be trying to figure out what the go is about de-extinction with my next guest, Associate Professor of Paleontology at the University of Otago. Professor Nick Rawlins. You're going to be having a chat at Umbrellos later tonight at 5:30 about this topic. So let's talk about some de-extinction. Before I do that, though, how are you this morning?
Fairly good. It's a good morning. It's not icy cold. Managed to get down the hill in one piece.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. Do you live in what kind of area do you live in?
We live up in Mornington.
So very, very hilly.
It's always a bit of a hike down the hill to work.
Yeah, how were you faring last week when they were, you know, cancelling buses with the frost and all sorts?
It was dicey, but we did manage to find a way down the hill. There was like one side of the street that was completely ice-free, and as soon as you got to the centre line, the other side was just completely choked in it.
True. It's funny how that happens, eh? My goodness. Let's get into talking about de-extinction. First questions first, very silly question. If you had to, if you had a wish to de-extinct any animal, just as a thought experiment, what would it be and why?
For me, it'd be out of left field, and I'd say parasites.
Parasites.
They live in the guts of animals now, and they're vitally important to animal health. So if we think... If our gut health goes awry, we take probiotics to recreate good gut bacteria. So you can't actually bring back an extinct animal without bringing back the parasites that it actually used to have. And we know, for example, with moa, that their poo was chock-a-block full of parasites. If you were a moa that lived down in the lowlands, there was larger population density, you had more parasites than if you lived up in the highlands, but those parasites had important functions, and a lot of them have gone extinct.
So that's a curious thing about de-extinction, and what I'll talk about later is the finer granular details you don't think about. You know, gut health is incredibly vital to maintaining an organism. Let's get into talking about how it works, though. To my understanding, there's two very serious ways of quote-unquote de-extinction. There's cloning a dead creature by implanting a nuclei from the extinct creature into the embryo of a surrogate species. Or there's genetically engineering a new creature by utilizing fossils and filling the DNA gaps and using a surrogate species. Is that an accurate description of our current means of de-extinction?
So the only true way you could do de-extinction is through cloning. So if your listeners think of Dolly the sheep.
Yes.
And so that's where... Her entire genetic blueprint, her nuclear DNA, was taken out of a sheep. It was implanted into an egg cell that had its own DNA removed. It was given a zap, started creating into an embryo, and that was implanted, and Dolly the sheep was born. Now, you need really high-quality DNA for that. So if you remember back to the high school experiments you did where you blended up a banana or a strawberry or broccoli and some cold alcohol and detergent, and then got the skewer and mixed it around and pulled out these long strings of snot. That's your really high quality DNA.
Now,
ancient DNA is put that DNA in a wood-fired pizza oven, 500 degrees overnight. It comes out crumbs, shards, dust.
Yep.
And while we can take all these little crumbly puzzle pieces and reconstruct the genetic blueprint, it's not good quality. We don't have those long stretches of DNA, so we can't actually use cloning. So companies like Colossal are using genetic engineering. So they will sequence the genome, say a direwolf, and they will compare it to a genome of a close relative, the grey wolf, and they'll say, where in the genome do all the individual letters, the A's, G's, C's and T's, the genetic code, differ? And they did 20 changes to 14 genes using this enzyme called CRISPR. It's like a pair of scissors. It can chop out a specific piece of DNA and insert a synthetic piece of a DNA that matches the extinct animal.
Yeah.
And so you take that genetically engineered grey wolf, which has got really high quality DNA. You put that DNA in a cell, you give a zap, develops into an embryo and put in a surrogate. So it's not de-extinction, it's genetic engineering creating designer grey wolves. Mm. So it's what Colossal like to call functional de-extinction, which kind of makes a mockery of that phrase. If it walks like a duck, talks like a duck, and quacks like a duck, therefore it's a duck. And what we have something is it looks like a duck, but whether it actually behaves like a duck like the job vacancy of a duck in the ecosystem.
Mm. Is it a duck proxy? You know?
Duck proxy.
Yeah.
Or as I saw a cartoon the other day, that said, if it looks like a duck, walks like a duck, and talks like a duck, it's actually a genetically engineered fish.
Very true. Do we always need an existing relative of a extinct species to, you know, use this technology?
Yeah, we do. So if we think of our shards of DNA, we need to be able to reconstruct that genome. And we need what we call a scaffold genome to align our little shards of DNA against to build up the picture.
Yeah.
Now, that scaffold, think of it as like the picture in the puzzle box. It won't be of the species you're trying to de-extinct in most cases, but it might be a close relative. So it might be a picture that's similar to the one you're trying to reconstruct. But we also need a close relative that if you were going to try and bring these animals back, that to be able to genetically engineer. So for the direwolf, Colossal used the grey wolf. Mm. For the thylacine or Tasmanian tiger, they are using a little small marsupial called a fat-tailed dunart.
Is that underway? They're trying to reconstruct the thylacine?
They are trying to bring back the thylacine.
How is that going to work with a tiny little marsupial?
Well, you can't put a thylacine in a tiny little marsupial.
No.
The tiny little marsupial will explode.
Oh, yeah, it's like very much, yeah, yeah.
So Colossal want to reconstruct artificial wombs.
Oh, jeez, this is so dicey, man.
But the problem is there is so much that actually happens in the womb or in the egg that controls how you develop and everything. It's not actually coded for by genetics or DNA.
Yeah, this is the nurture aspect of things. Yeah.
And with moa, again, the closest living relative is a small flying bird called the tinamou. It's a chicken-sized bird from South America. So Colossal want to genetically engineer an emu. But if you've ever seen a giant moa egg, like what's on display in Otago Museum, and compare it to an emu egg, it's like you cannot fit a giant moa chick in an emu egg. So they're going to have to develop artificial egg technology. None of this technology is actually here yet.
This is nuts. I definitely want to get into this more, chat, because the de-extinction hype that was around the direwolf is now aimed at Aotearoa with the Peter Jackson-led campaign to de-extinct the moa, as you mentioned before. Mm. It's in full swing. Compared to the reanimated direwolf, how would we go about restoring moa? I mean, how much viable moa DNA do we have to use?
In terms of what Colossal want to try and do with the moa makes what they did with genetically engineering a grey wolf to look like what we think of a direwolf as out of Game of Thrones easy. So with the direwolf, Colossal did 20 changes in 14 genes.
Yes.
With the moa, they have announced they want to turn an emu genome into 100% a moa genome, which is a very tall order indeed, and the technology is not there. So if you a moa genetic code, the entire blueprint or the computer code that gives you a moa is 1 billion individual DNA letters long, conservatively. Now if you compare that code to say an emu or a tinamou, and you look at the bits you can compare, conservatively you're looking at about 10 million individual DNA differences that you would have to do to change
as well.
But then on top of that, you've got what we call structural differences in the genome, so how the genomes are packaged, how they're arranged, and trying to recreate all of this makes what Colossal wants to do to bring back a genetically engineered emu or a moa lookalike a very, very tall order indeed. So I'm personally very against de-extinction. I think we should develop the technology, but actually use it to save what we've got left.
Agree.
Not bring back species.
Maybe, you know how they have like the seed bank in Scandinavia that has tons of seeds in case of a doomsday event. Maybe do that with the DNA.
Yeah.
But maybe don't bring back, you know, thylacine. That's unnecessary. I want to quickly touch on, I guess, some indigenous concerns around the de-extinction of the moa, because if you watch the Colossal Bioscience trailer for this project, essentially, that's what it is. It's basically a movie trailer. It's on YouTube. They are very proud to say that it's actually a Māori-led project. Really what they're doing is facilitating Māori ambitions of de-extincting the moa, and they're very happy to use a couple of Ngāi Tahu spokespeople to, I guess, provide an indigenous person or people to stamp that project. What are the, you know, that seems like a lot of spin. What's the real concern in the Māori,
so,
in Māoridom about this?
To give you some background, as Colossal approached my collaborators and I last year repeatedly, saying that they wanted to fund all of our genome sequencing of moa, so long as they could use it for de-extinction, and then could we please hand over all of our indigenous contacts to them.
Oof.
And we have been sequencing moa genomes ethically and in partnership with mana whenua, iwi, hapu, runanga and trusts around New Zealand. And they support our research, but they have also said they are dead set against de-extinction.
Right.
And for many of the ecological reasons that are out there, there's no habitat. The moa could be really badly adapted to New Zealand 600 years on, or they could be too well adapted and become a pest. Who's going to pay for the conservation? Because that could take money away from conserving other taonga species.
Yeah.
But also in Māoridom, people can trace their ancestry back to all living plants and animals and extinct ones. So whakapapa, genealogy is really important. And messing with whakapapa is seen with disgust. It's tapu. But also, Māori have been actually locked out of discussions around genetic engineering, release of genetically engineered animals into the environment, especially with the potential lifting of the ban on genetic modification. So when Colossal's trailer came out, knowing all of the engagement that we had done, including with many individual Runanga and sub-tribes within Ngāi Tahu, we knew they were all dead set against it. So I was quite shocked when that trailer came out, because what we've worked out is, in the investigations we've actually done since, is it's very much cherry picking. There were a couple of people that came on board from the Ngāi Tahu Research Centre onto this project, teamed up with Canterbury Museum and Colossal, and then they basically made a captain's call. There was no engagement with even their local Runanga. We have engaged with their local Runanga, their environmental arm, over moa genome sequencing, and their completely against de-extinction. So it was very much a captain's call.
Yeah, it definitely felt like in the trailer, like, oh, we've got Māori, so it's okay. What it felt. It felt very tokenistic.
Yeah, and it they said, we speak for all of Ngāi Tahu, and we speak for all of the South Island. It's like, Ngāi Tahu's not all the South Island. There are 8 iwi at the top of Te Tā'ihu, the South Island that we work with, and they're all against de-extinction. Now, if we think of the giant moa that Colossal wants to bring back, the giant moa didn't just occur within Ngāi Tahu's Rohe or tribal area. It occurred all over the South Island.
Mm.
So while the local Runanga in Christchurch may have rangatiratanga to sequence the genome of a moa from a swamp in their Rohe, it's a much wider conversation that needs to happen across the entirety of Te Waipounamu, the South Island, around should a genetically modified emu be brought back and released. And my understanding is those those iwi-wide conversations are now happening, but the majority of Ngāi Tahu Runanga are dead set against it.
Fair enough. I'm pretty angry with myself. In a recent interview with Minister for Courts and the Associate Minister of Justice, Nicole McKee and Chloe Swarbrick, media personality Ryan Bridges joked about how it's okay to mine on Kiwi habitat because if they go extinct, we can de-extinct them. Do you think that there's a risk that with de-extinction technology, we could allow certain industries to skirt environmental concerns or environmental responsibilities because they can just bring back any species they might wipe out?
Well, given the current government and their views on the environment and the fast-tracking legislation and Shane Jones's quotes in the media of if there's a skink or a blind frog, it's goodbye Freddy.
Yep.
I think it's a real danger. The Minister for the Interior of the US has already said that, oh, we could do away with the endangered species list in the US because we could just de-extinct animals. Extinction is forever. Mm. You can't bring them back. But we shouldn't buy into the misinformation and the really disingenuous, dumbed-down science communication that's coming out of Colossal and the de-extinction groups about this. They will say, we have a moral imperative to bring back these animals to undo the sins of the past. And to me, it's like, if we do that, we don't actually learn from any of the sins of the past.
Yeah, yeah. Completely agree. And you're ignoring the sins of the present as well.
Pretty much.
Yeah. I guess I want to get into another issue I have with de-extinction, and that is what gets de-extincted. It's typically what we call charismatic megafauna, which is a term used to describe relatively large animals with symbolic value or wide popular appeal. In Aotearoa, kiwi or amoa or harst eagle would be an example. Major de-extinction efforts so far are for these kinds of megafauna, woolly mammoth, dire wolf, the amoa. Are we at risk of only bringing back these megafauna rather than, you know, if we were to actually de-extinct something, could we do something that's more useful, like a pollinator or ecosystem engineer?
Yeah, and I think we are in that danger. There are arguments to say if you bring back a mammoth, that they'll stamp all of the Siberian tundra and turn it back into mammoth steppe. Now that's all on good, but you're going to need thousands of mammoths to do that. And like George Church and Colossal have been promising to bring back a genetically engineered baby Asian elephant that looks like a mammoth for years, and it hasn't happened. But you need to bring back enough individuals that they're actually genetically healthy and secure. So you want them to have the genetic variation of your listeners of the city of Dunedin, not the genetic variation of the Habsburg royal dynasty or the English royal family, or Kakapo or Takahe. So I think we're in a real danger, just like with conservation, as a lot of people will focus on the charismatic animals, the cute, the cuddly, and forget the ugly, the downtrodden, the ones that still have fundamental I suppose ecosystem services and roles in the ecosystem we need to bring back.
Mm-hmm. You need to keep it. It's a holistic thing. You can't just have the nice things or the seemingly quite unquote nice things. I want to thank you for your time and coming on this morning, Nick. Do you have any final words for our listeners?
No, just if you're in town at 5:30 tonight, we're giving a talk about de-extinction and all of the pros, the cons, the concerns, what's hype, what's not. So really a Mythbusters episode at Umbrellas at 5:30.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of Mythbusters, do you think they were like one of the first to ever do science communication effectively?
I think they were really, really good.
Yeah.
I'm showing my 8 and 11-year-old Mythbusters episodes, and they're absolutely loving it for the science aspect.
Oh, that's awesome. That's great. I think a similar guy on YouTube is Vsauce, if you've come across him.
I'll have to have a look him up.
He's really funny. He's quite weird. Anyway, thank you for coming on the program, Nick. I really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for having me on.
Of course. All right, folks. That was Associate Professor Nick Lawrence of Paleontology at the University of Otago. We're talking about de-extinction. If you'd like to go hear more about de-extinction, go to Umbrellas at 5:30. We're going to play the theme.
That was a Radio 1 91 FM podcast. You can find more of them at r1.co.nz/podcasts.